don't you, dear listener? You want to have that song? Well, guess what? You can't have it. Yeah, because it's our song. Yeah, we wrote it, we performed it, we produced it, we mixed it, we mastered it. It's our freaking song. Yeah! There is no band called The Vetoes. They didn't do a song called Car Trouble. You can't find the music video on YouTube. There is no EP called 8 Minutes that the song is featured on. The EP is not available on iTunes, Google Play, Amazon Music, or Spotify. There is no website called thevetoesmusic.com where you can find all this information, and they do not have a new music video on their YouTube page called Criminals. It's not there. It doesn't exist. But if such a band did exist, we'd be eternally grateful to them and would extol the musical virtues of said band every chance we got. But no, it's us. It's always been us. Speaking of us, this is You Missed It, an underrated podcast that discusses underrated movies. We are on SoundCloud, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, Spotify, and for some reason, iTunes.
Yes, for some reason.
Fun fact, if you search for YMI underscore podcast on a search engine, you'll find links to a podcast called YMI by Our Daily Bread Ministries. That's not us. With me, as always, is Jack, Zach, Rylan, and Andrew. I am your host, the master of misogyny, the umpire of uncomfortableness, the connoisseur of cringe, the man, the myth, the compulsive masturbator, Alex. Welcome. Welcome.
Yay.
We're so glad you could join us for this special episode of You Missed It, the Session 9 edition. Shot in September and October of 2000. This horror mystery film had a limited release in the United States starting on August 10th, 2001. First shown in July 2001 at the Fantasia International Film Festival, held at the Imperial Cinema in Montreal, Quebec. Directed by Brad Anderson. Written by Brad Anderson and Stephen Gebedin. Starring Peter Mullen, David Caruso, Stephen Gebedin, Josh Lucas, and Brendan Sexton III, among others. Shot on location in Danvers, Massachusetts, about 21 miles northeast of Boston, this was the last film to be distributed by USA Films. The parent company and current distributor is Universal Studios. Budget for the film was approximately $1.5 million. Opening weekend, $76,400. Total lifetime gross, according to BoxOfficeMojo.com, $387,000 and $176,000. Set in Danvers, Massachusetts at Danvers State Hospital, closed in 1985, a five-man asbestos removal team attempt the massive task after the owner, Gordon Fleming, wins the bid for the job by promising to finish in a mere 1 week, which sets the stress bar quite high quite quickly. After one of the crew goes missing, tensions begin to rise. And now, it's time for everyone's favorite game, How Does It Make You Feel?
You gotta make that a sound beat.
For like... Yeah, just have some clapping. Yeah.
With the Looney Tunes jingle. It'd make as much sense as the Guns N' Roses show.
I guess so, Jesus.
I like that you're clapping like that, Zach. You know that speed clapping's a whole thing. Do you know that there's a Guinness World Record for speed clapping?
I'm not surprised by that
at all. Is it like hummingbird speed or something?
Dude, watch. You know what, listener? Just go to YouTube once this is over and Google speed clapping. You'll thank me.
See, I want to do butt cheek clapping. I want to get in the record book for that.
Oh, good Lord.
That's
it's probably a thing.
It just sounds like
well, it's farting. It's farting.
Because No, it's twerking.
It sounds like fapping.
Just
like even how you were doing it there, that sounded like really
rapid.
A
lot of masturbation chatter in this early episode. It's a little much.
We're just getting started.
Children.
Well,
what the hell, Wolfen?
Nah.
We're with the chronic masturbator, so.
Yeah, you know, session 9, you know, the ninth session.
Ninth session in a row, bitch.
Oh, shit. That's a record, man. Damn.
As members of the entertainment industry, Our goal is to brainwash the audience into accepting the Dark Lord Satan into the hearts and minds of all humanity. And we do so by inserting Illuminati-related symbols and metaphors into TV and film, as well as manipulating emotions via drama, thriller, and horror, and also by using backwards masking and doublespeak in radio and podcasts. The usual procedure at this point would be to ask the person to my left about their opinion of the film, but I'm going to alter that slightly this time around, and I shall explain why at the end.
You don't like me?
Silence. Why the left? Because we are a group of commie, pinko, feminist, anarchist, SJW, lefty, cuck, fascists.
We're not going to have any more feds anymore, man.
Who are also furry, transgender, non-binary, god-hating atheists who sacrifice small, cute little animals while dancing naked around a huge fire composed of burning Bibles and Kenny G CDs.
Ooh.
And we most definitely eat babies. Yum, yum, yum. Oh. Speaking of which, this podcast is sponsored by Oreos. Oreos taste just like babies.
No, we're not.
And you know what babies taste like?
Oreos?
Chicken. Oh. Now, on to the film. Rylan, how did it make you feel?
Well, basically, the end credits started to roll, and I kind of just wanted to start it right back up again from the beginning. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, totally. This is a really interesting, interesting how this movie was paced out. It started off as like a fairly simple premise, as a lot of horror movies do, but things just kind of it seemed to be such a slow burn, kind of immersing you in the atmosphere and following all the different characters around. But it just hit a point at one point where it becomes difficult to tell kind of where everything started to go wrong and whether what you were seeing was even real to begin with. And I'm still trying to process it a little bit. So not the most coherent going first here, but I thought it was really good. It was really cool, and I definitely like want to go back and go through it again to see if I can to see what like indicators and clues and such you could pick out. This is the type of movie that's like right up my alley. I love like movies that mess with your mind and keep you guessing. So thanks for bringing this one to the table. Not sure how much I have to say at the moment, but I'm sure I'll be able to sprinkle some more in afterwards.
Excellent. Well, I've got the Blu-ray. Unfortunately, as I said to Andrew and Zach before we started, Jack and Zach before I started, this is a horse before the cart story because I don't have a Blu-ray player, but I got an Amazon.com account just so I could get this on Blu-ray. And I had this old man mentality of, well, I've got a DVD player. I'm sure that can play it. No. No, no matter what programs you have.
So I didn't get what you were referring to earlier when you said that. I was like, I don't know, Alex is just crazy.
No, I am not referring to anything. He's being straight up.
Blu-ray players will play DVDs, but not vice versa.
Exactly. I didn't know you were dead serious about that.
We heard the first 5 minutes episode. We know Alex is crazy.
Yeah, that's true. Damn.
But aren't we all? It's one of those movies that makes you question your own sanity as well. So I don't know what to believe anymore.
I know Alex just puts on a lot of layers into his intros. You're like, you're thinking, what the? And then you're like, oh wait, he's got a point.
Yeah, the character of Mary in the movie is based on Alex's, childhood.
Did you like my boob shot in the film?
It was good. Yeah, that was nice. Good. Yeah, that was nice. Getting into character, that's good.
That's good.
Andrew, how did it make you feel?
So I enjoyed this one quite a bit. Rylan, have you ever seen Memento, by the way?
Yeah, actually I have. Okay. Yeah, just
good.
Once.
Good. Oh, just once?
Yeah.
Damn. No. All right.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, that's another one that warrants multiple viewings as well.
It's like that. Yeah. This one, kind of,
but
has
I feel
a,
like, but this one's a lot more like low key and a lot more understated than Memento. Like
absolutely.
Memento,
it's
you
kind
of, you know, like from the start that you're getting into something intense and slowly peeling back the layers. And I mean, obviously you kind of have this expectation with this movie too, because you know it's a horror movie going into it, and it's set in a creepy abandoned mental hospital. So like, you know, some shit's going to go down, but basically I think by the time you realize that shit is going down, enough shit has already gone down that there's no going back.
Yeah. That's
exactly right.
Yeah. No, exactly. It's less of a, it's more horror than it is like a mystery.
Yeah.
I would say like it has a little bit, it's more like thriller suspense kind of thing. That's what it's playing on the most. That's the slow burn. And I like that. So I like a movie that takes its time, that gives you time to kind of settle in being unsettled, you know, kind of sit there and become unsettled slowly and it doesn't show too much too quickly. I was wondering if it was going to do that, and it didn't, which I appreciated. The only problem I had is I thought the payoff, it didn't have enough of a payoff for me to be worth it, to be worth that slow burn.
Yeah.
That's just for me. But it was something that I, because here's the thing. So Ryland, you were saying that, oh, you can go back and there's so many things you can pick out. I feel like there isn't as much there as I feel like, oh, you can play it back in your head and you kind of see it all pretty quickly. Like it's not so layered that there might be some, so I guess I could, obviously any repeat viewing, you're going to see stuff.
Yeah.
You didn't
for me,
see
it was more kind of just like for, it's kind of just like when everything is wrapping up at the end, it kind of makes you think, okay, like who the stuff that I was seeing earlier, like from whose perspective was I actually seeing it and was it real or not?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it almost seems like the whole like the whole movie, like in the mind of the Gordon, the lead character, like might be like a weird manifestation of like the therapy session. Like it almost seems because throughout the movie we have the other guy, Mike, I think, who's, you know, discovers the session tapes in the underground tunnels there, and is listening to the doctor speaking with one of the former patients, and you tie that back to the voices that or not necessarily the voices that Gordon's hearing, because that kind of turns out to have a different correlation as well, but the things that he's telling himself, like you need to wake up and such, that it's almost like perhaps Gordon's like, physical body is in a therapy session with the doctor, but his head is in his mind. He's in this movie that we are seeing, if that makes any sense at all.
All right. So I'll tell you my perspective on the whole thing then, and why I don't feel like I would benefit much from repeat viewings. So I do have one question for you guys that I can't remember. So this might be a little spoilery, just because I need to.
We've never spoiled a movie
we can't
before.
Have spoiled it here.
Never.
I. You know what? You're saying that we're all these things, so I don't want to be. Spoilers are worse than everything you mentioned at the beginning. Anybody who spoils anything is far worse than any of that. So I don't want to be that guy without a warning. Okay. Spoiler tag. Okay. No, but at what point did he discover the tapes at the beginning, Mark? Was that the first day?
Yeah. Mike, I think that was the first day.
Mike
right away,
them on
right?
Monday.
Before he... Wait, sorry. So he discovered them on Monday. That was after the whole thing with his wife, right?
That was... Yeah, Friday is when they got the job. They did the walkthrough with Bill Griggs. They got the job. Yeah. Friday night was when Gordon killed his family.
Yeah.
And then the next time we see was Monday, and that's when Mike finds the tapes is Monday.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, yeah. So for me, yeah, it kind of fits with what I thought, which was... at the very end, the whole point they were trying to make is like, oh, what does Simon represent? What does Simon represent? He represents, and at the very end, I think it was that was the very last line of the movie where he's saying,
where do you live?
Where do you live in the weak and
the wounded.
And the wounded, right? Yeah. And that's what he, obviously he had become over time, because they gave some backstory about that, and then he became susceptible to a Simon. And that was kind of the whole point of it. So like from... The whole movie's for sure from his perspective. Obviously you're seeing what's happening in real life. You're wondering what's in his head and what's not. But I find that you're just seeing, mostly his perspective the whole time, because you're seeing him, he's schizophrenic. He's kind of losing it. He's letting out these little bits, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he believes that he's normal until he finds out that he's not normal. He has this Simon within him.
Right? Yeah, yeah, I get I get the idea of like the entity of Simon like manifesting itself in
so that in multiple people. Everything.
But I mean, I guess if you feel that that's the only if that was kind of the only payoff to the thing, then I would have to agree with you that that's a little bit disappointing. But for me, considering the unreliable narrator facet of it, makes it more interesting.
The unreliable narrator, like you mean the voices in his head, or are you talking
like
about
the possibility of that?
Oh, of
Of like looking at it through that lens, it maybe offers a little bit more.
Okay, I guess that's where we differ. Is that I find that I don't, from what I saw and what I remember watching the movie, I don't think that there was much more there. That I don't think that you'll see much more when you rewatch it. But I don't know. That's just because I saw, so like a film I saw that's kind of similarly structured, it just in terms of it's a slow burn with a lot of reveals that make you want to rewatch it because of the payoff, right? Mm-hmm. I saw Suspiria recently, the new
one. I was thinking that too, yeah.
And it was just such an incredible film that had that same type of structure, and it did it so well. I immediately wanted to, Zach and I actually saw it together. We immediately wanted to see it again, just because it was one of those ones where you're like, I need to know what the fuck. I need to watch it again. I need context. I need more context.
To clarify, we're talking about the 2018 Suspiria, not the original. But
the American,
Italian, really.
Italian remake, sorry.
Which is weird to say because the original is Italian. But
I always, I'm so used to saying American remake that I was like, wait, it's just, no, it wasn't American.
It's a reimagining, really. It's so different, but it's, but that movie is like an art house,
exactly.
Know,
so that's
movie,
the point
right?
I'm making is that I watched this and then the structure felt very similar, but the payoff felt like there was less of a payoff. A lot less of a payoff for me. Not just the reveal being the payoff. I'm just saying that even the context being the payoff, the context for the reason why it took so long to get there, I didn't feel like it, for me, didn't feel like it paid off quite as much as I would have wanted it to. But I did like the pacing. If we're talking positives, I like the pacing. I didn't, the acting was good. The guys were all on point. They were all solid. So there's no complaints there. And it was shot well. It was creepy. Like it did make me feel uneasy, which I liked. Yeah. It was just that payoff for me.
It was a good use of the set and the sound design too, with everything was so echoey and cavernous and ominous sounding. Like it sounded, it looked and sounded like a place that's just been forgotten for a long time. Super creepy.
Yeah. And even they even made asbestos just seem like they made it. I don't know. The whole time I was watching the movie, I was looking at it. I was like, oh, fuck. Dude, I wouldn't want to be anywhere near this place. Not because of the creepy shit anymore. I'm looking at all that fucking asbestos.
Oh, dude. It's deadly.
Guy's taking it out, and you're like, this can all kill you. And he's like explaining it. I'm like, ah, get that shit away from me. But yeah, no, everything else. For me, if it weren't for me being an underwhelming payoff at the end, it would have been a bit higher for me. But I think it was a solid film for me, and I appreciate you bringing it in, Alex.
Aye. Jack.
Oh,
did it make you feel?
Huh? Yeah. Okay. So it's my turn. I'm actually kind of glad I didn't go first because I just kind of wanted to get a vibe around first. I am so curious what Zach thinks of this movie. I can't wait to hear what he thinks of it because
I've seen it too before.
So. Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
So I also bring that to the table.
Oh, okay. But... Well, there you go. This was a mixed bag for me a little bit. I'm with Andrew. I did think just to go straight to one of the issues I had with.
Do I need to issue a spoiler tag here?
Well, I'm not going
to... Spoiler alert?
Well, not really. I'm not going to go into...
You spoiled it already.
Yeah.
I did? Okay.
So the baby kills everybody.
It's the baby from Transpotting. It came back.
It's funny you mention
that,
actually. No. It's funny you mention that because, you know, the main actor, did you recognize him?
Oh, yeah, Josh. Sorry.
Peter Mullen.
Yeah,
right.
He's in Transpotting.
Oh, right.
He supplies the drugs and
stuff. Mother.
That's
right. Right. That's funny. And also, we were making one little joke too. We were making CSI jokes with David Caruso, but please tell me y'all caught the CSI reunion.
Oh, of course.
The opening, the guy giving the tour. What was the character's name? Billy or
Bill Griggs?
Bill Griggs. Yeah, that guy is the lead investigator in the original CSI.
That's right,
dude. I don't watch CSI. That's,
well, well, we looked at each other. Jack and I looked at each other, just like, yay.
So it was like a little reunion before there was they had shows. So I thought that was kind of funny. I'm with Andrew. I did think the ending, the payoff was actually quite weak. There was a lot of, the movie had a lot of good things going for it. I think it did a wonderful job at building the sense of dread. Mm-hmm. I thought the cinematography was effective and just this movie takes a lot from The Shining.
You saw two shots in there, two scrolling shots.
It wasn't even just the scroll. It was everything, like the whole opening scene. And then just to drill it home with the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
Yeah. And that big location.
I saw Shining references before Monday, Tuesday started popping up. I was like, oh my God, this
all you needed was a labyrinth in the front of the hospital.
Pretty much. But like the whole opening scene of them establishing the location, establishing the geography, going into history. That's pretty much the opening scene of The Shining at the hotel. Like to a T, and just how they're shooting it and everything like that. I was like, yeah, this is a lot like The Shining. And then the whole movie is paced like The Shining. It's just a slow build through, you know, shit's going to happen and you're just waiting and you're kind of on the edge of your seat, like not really edge of your seat, but you're just uncomfortable and you're just, something's going to happen. What's going to happen? And the movie does a great job at showing things that you're like, something's going to happen with that. There's a little scene where they're in a cemetery and there's a tree or mm-hmm. that fell down. Yeah. And there was basically twigs that look like spikes. I'm like, someone's going to get impaled on that. Spoilers, it doesn't. And that, to me, is probably why I think the ending is a letdown, is that it did build up a lot of things that was never paid off. Mm-hmm. And I thought it's almost like there was two twist endings in this film. And the first one was like, okay. And then the second one was like, okay. I was like, that's it almost came off as like, when you go back and watch it, I feel like in this case, there's going to be a lot of things you're going to pull apart. Mm-hmm. Because like, particularly with certain characters, you're like, how the hell did you talk to that person? Why are we going from this person if the ending is such? Mm-hmm. So for me, that was there wasn't much of a payoff. And it was almost like it was like pushing, like maybe there is something supernatural potentially. I thought the reference of the girl in the 444 and whatever, like, mm-hmm. did not pay off. I thought it was very, like, anticlimactic in that sense. Like, it's that. We're doing this. That's Psycho, pretty much. Or I felt like this film had a lot, like, all the good things it did do, there was a lot of horror hallmarks or references beyond just The Shining. I felt like the camera running up to somebody and then quickly cutting is Friday 13th.
Yeah.
And I was just like, okay. And even I thought the music was cheap and actually kind of ruined certain scenes for me, I thought. The dee-dee. It was like, this is Arkham Knight music I'm hearing right now. There was like a lot of actually that film did bring a lot of like Arkham and the more recent Batman Telltale games. Just detective and going in and finding all these really trippy shit in like hidden caves and taverns or whatever. Yeah, no, I just thought there's a lot of things going against it. I did also think a lot of the characters were underdeveloped for the most part. I thought, particularly the workers, I thought the Gordon character, obviously, he's the most paid attention to, so he has the most depth. And David Caruso is just, it's just him. He has a presence that's, you know, you can't see him playing. He plays himself pretty much the whole time. So, but he does a good job at that. And I didn't think there was any bad performances. I just thought they were underdeveloped at times. And the one thing I had to look this up because it was tripping me out mm-hmm. is that the film, I had to look up the camera and I actually found out this was the first film shot at 24 frames digital.
Yeah. Yes.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay. And I knew, once I read that, I was like, makes sense, because the whole time I was watching, it's like,
it's got that look
that it looks a little cheap, you know, like, or like at times.
Especially back then,
like, I was just like, why is this is tripping me out. I was like, when was this made? I was like, because, and then just seeing that fact, I was like, oh, that makes so much sense. Uh-huh. So this was like made just a year, because the next film to use this camera was Attack of the Clones.
That's right, yeah.
And then digital cinematography took off because old digital cameras would only shoot at 30 frames per second, yeah. not cinema for 24 frames. Yeah. And that was, apparently this was one of the first movies to do it
yeah.
with that camera. So that's kind of neat.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, overall, I thought there's a lot of good things going for it. I thought it was well directed at that in terms of building dread, and the pacing was good. But I thought just the story and the characters and the overall payoff was weak. Mm-hmm. So mixed bag for me.
Okay. Zach, mm-hmm. how did it make you feel?
Session 9, more like session 5.
Yeah!
Yeah!
Well,
let me... for those of you who are just listening and not actually here at the table, there were sunglasses involved just now.
Yeah, you know, had to pay tribute, you know. Mm-hmm. What can I say? So I'm surprised I haven't heard one word that I thought I would hear amongst everybody, and that's atmosphere, because I think that's a big key to this movie. Oh. Is that it's got really strong atmosphere throughout the whole thing that I think is a big character, you know, in the movie, and I think it elevates the creepiness, you know, and everything. I do like the fact that you pointed out, Jack, that it has a lot of, like, I guess, homages or, like, almost connections to, like, The Shining and things that. It definitely does, but I think this movie is really good on its own. Like, even though it's, like, a low budget and things like that, I think it does do a good job of building, and I wasn't underwhelmed with the climax. I mean, even though it is, like, basic and it's, you know, not like super complex or anything, I do like where it went. And you know, I remember, because I saw this a long time ago, and I just remember, you know, like the creepy vibe, that's kind of what I took from it. I remember it being very creepy and, you know, isolated and, you know, just going crazy. And that's pretty much what the movie is. It's people going crazy, or maybe one person, or you know maybe he won't spoil
already
that
crazy,
or maybe he's, you know, already crazy, exactly. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I like the vibe. I actually like the music, Jack. So I'm actually kind of surprised you weren't into that.
Nah, I just thought it was it kind of came off as a like something they stock music. They just last minute do something.
Yeah, I just thought it was different. I thought it was like warped, and it kind of went again with the atmosphere. I thought it really played.
I thought most of that just completely kind of took me out of it a little bit. I thought it was
the vibes I was getting was actually very, why doesn't matter.
Actually, that's a good point. Actually,
that's funny.
which is a short film that we did a few months ago.
It was better.
shots fired.
But yeah, no, I mean, that's funny, because I mean, for me, it just kind of put me more into the atmosphere, and I think that's the strongest point of this movie, is it just does such a good job with
No, you are right about that. As I did allude to, saying that the movie does a great job at building dread,
sure,
a sense of dread, so mm-hmm. the atmosphere,
yeah.
So you are right. Mm-hmm. Like it's well directed, mm-hmm. in terms of pacing and shooting and editing.
Yeah, just the shots and stuff too, like just they do such a good job with that.
Oh yeah.
No, I constantly, when I watch that movie, like I'm looking at the walls, like, mm-hmm. I'm looking at the photos, like the whole time I was watching this movie, I was like trying to like look at the graffiti, because I almost feel like there's stuff there, you know.
Yeah.
What I mean.
Mm-hmm. Is there?
But no, I don't know.
No.
Yeah.
But it's the good question.
Unless you're a Black Sabbath fan.
You're thinking Argento.
I saw that.
What was that one?
You're thinking Deep Red is what you're talking
about. Yeah.
No, I wasn't thinking like that per se. Like there'd literally be somebody. I was thinking of just like maybe there's
like there's a hint or something.
Yeah, there's like foreshadowing. I was looking for foreshadowing.
Right. No,
yeah.
I was keeping an eye out for it too, because I love those moments where like the camera's just moving and you just see something that catches your eye, or you just go, oh, and then when it comes back, or there's a payoff, it's just awesome.
Well, I mean, that's a little different, but like the foreshadowing part, like just like a hidden message kind of thing. It's my second time seeing it. I'd seen this before. So I was wondering like, oh, is there going to be something that's going to like a Get Out kind of thing where you kind of see stuff like ahead of time, mm-hmm. if you watch it again and you're like, oh, that's cool, they had that. But no, it doesn't really do that, which is fine. And again, that plays to like what Andrew was saying, that it's, you know, maybe a little too basic for him, I guess. Like, you just thought it was a little straightforward.
I don't know. Like, okay, so look at what it's inspired by.
Mm-hmm.
The Shining.
Mm-hmm.
that's film school gold. That you go back, that's so layered, and there's so many tiny fine details that people are still debating that movie.
Of course.
To this day. And you look at that and compare, I know they're,
well, you
should. It's apples to oranges, but at the same time, if it wants to compare itself, it wants to use that as inspiration, then it should at least try to do something cool like that. But it doesn't, it's not even in the same league, not even close, in my opinion. Just because you, like, even Suspiria that I was talking about, that was just recent for me. Yeah. That had so much going for it, so much that I still want to delve into, because that movie, there's so many things that I still need to figure out about that movie that I want to go back to, that I want to look at again. For this one, I had no impulse to go watch it again. I was like, oh, I saw that movie, it's done.
Yeah, no, I feel like this movie, like a lot of like these type of mystery movies or thrillers or ones that you're waiting for a payoff, there's always a moment in these movies that just blows your fucking mind, or you go, oh shit. And like that, I didn't really get any of that.
That's why I mentioned, I'm like, oh, Memento, oh, The Shining's great example.
Yeah, Suspiria.
Those all have that big time. But this one, I was like, oh, the reveal happened. I was like, okay.
The most memorable. Oh, okay. The most memorable part, and the part that I'm going to always remember, is the
that was great.
You.
That surprised me more than anything else in the movie.
That one was like,
I was like, damn.
Like, I feel like that was a blooper, but they loved it so much.
I do
they
love how the camera moves.
The wide angle just pushing in. Fuck you.
Somebody loved it.
It was like, very intense.
Great. A lot of people loved that on set.
The director had to burst out laughing when he did that. Because, come on, how can you? Like, we all laughed, burst out laughing. Like, we didn't really react.
Yeah, I
like,
forgot about that.
Throughout the whole movie, pretty much, like, in terms of, like, but that one got a huge reaction because it was out of nowhere, and it was great.
Well, it's not like a tense scene, too, like, where it's, like, they're all talking
about, it's finally shit's happening. All of a sudden, now the ball is starting to roll, and what's going to happen? Even that, I just thought that it was quite underwhelming. It's like, oh, this is what we're doing. Okay.
I don't know. I always go back to the atmosphere. I mean, and the reason I guess why I would like rewatch it is just to kind of like be in that place again. And I mean, like you said, it's like The Shining. It has atmosphere too, sure. And it is. Yeah. I mean, obviously, The Shining is a better movie. It's one of the best movies of all time.
Yeah.
But I mean, Session 9, I think on its own is still very good.
Yeah.
I think there's definitely things you can get from it. There's obviously like rewatching it again. Yeah. There's not like tons of things there's this and there's that, but I think it's more of just to be
the
experience.
Atmosphere is what you're saying.
That's what I come back to, and the performances I think are really good in it too. And I do like the music. Like, I didn't really have any problems with it. The only thing I can really agree with is, it's like it's a little basic, but I just don't have a problem with that.
That's fine. It's just you say the atmosphere, but these old hospitals, these psych wards, places like that, they're inherently creepy.
Yes.
Just especially abandoned, and anything to do with a psych ward or mentally insane, anything like that, automatically creepy.
Exactly.
Automatically.
It's a brilliant idea to set.
But I've just seen it. I've just seen that setting done better, which is why it doesn't work for me at quite the same level, because I've played Outlast. Mm-hmm. That shit scares the hell out of me, because that's a way creepier insane asylum compared to this.
That's also very different too.
It is, but it's the same atmosphere. You're talking about that feeling. The feeling's the same because it's a similar location. It's creepy, it's abandoned, it's the same style of location. So it's creating the same atmosphere for me, just one's doing it more effectively than the other.
I think they're just different. I mean, they're the same location, but they're doing it very differently. Like you had said, this is like a slow burn.
I just
burn.
Don't think that it was a
I agree with
standout
that.
Like for atmosphere, I don't think it's a standout. I just think it's good atmosphere.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's like again, we're mentioning all these other things. Suspiria's atmosphere was
But
way,
you keep
way
bringing
better.
Up Suspiria. That's
the
a completely
Shining, the
different movie.
Okay, fine,
I don't know
Shining.
What you're talking
well,
about.
Well, for that one, it was more structure. It was like slow burn to big payoff, makes you want to rewatch.
It's also fresh in his
that
head,
was,
so he's going
to
draw
well,
back
no,
to
but
it.
I just, but yeah. I just don't. It's like, yeah, Ninja Turtles is a really good movie, too. I like that.
That has
well,
atmosphere.
I wouldn't compare it to this movie.
Well,
that's
no, kind
of how I feel right now.
Not really, because they're more similar. This one's a slow burn. It's building atmosphere. It has shocking payoff.
But so does the house. I don't know the house.
Well,
of the devil.
Okay,
like, that
so
is
it
a
has
slow
shocking.
Burn
I think what it, let me throw in a wrench here is I think Yeah, it has atmosphere. That's without question.
Yeah.
And it has good atmosphere. It's established well. Mm-hmm. It's not, that's like not the problem with the film. The problem with the film is, for me at least, is that I'm just going to go on a limb. I did not find this scary.
Okay.
Once.
So you weren't creeped out at all.
You can be out. Creep, but
that's the movie. The movie is very creepy.
There's creepy, but then there's like The Shining's creepy, and then it keeps building off that creepy where you're feeling more uncomfortable and more like, ugh, and then it just balls the wall and you're like, oh shit.
The payoff is scary.
Yeah.
It's actually scary.
This film, nothing scared me. I was like, even the Friday the 13th things, it was cheap because I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah. To your point. Like, you're right. Usually it's like a slow build where you just feel uneasy. You're never scared. You're just like, I don't like what I'm feeling right now, or I don't like this place, whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually it builds up to something where you're like, that creates genuine fear. Mm-hmm. Not something where it's like, oh, I'm just, where it's cheap or a jump scare or something like that. It's where it pays off and you feel like, oh, this is paid off and actually made me feel not just jump scared, like frightened, but actually afraid of what's happening.
Like uncomfortable and all that. And that's pretty much
it. That's The Shining. Shining has that payoff.
Yeah. This film, yeah, it does
this
a good job.
Doesn't.
Yeah. This one, yeah, just
the, you're the, like, oh, he's crazy. I don't even care. Okay. I don't even find him that scary.
No.
I look at him and he's like, oh, he's like lobotomizing people and shit. And you're like, eh. Like, that's my reaction to it. So I kind of don't.
I was prepared for like a fucked up. I'm like, someone's going to get lobotomized and it's going to be fucked up. That's going to be my moment. And then when it happened, I was like, okay, that was it.
Also, the rating on this must have been like PG-13 or something. Right?
No, it had some F-bombs and it had some drug use. So it's
definitely R.
I think
it
came up with
because I was like, they really didn't want to show like.
No,
the
it was very
much.
Tamed
like,
in that
it,
sense.
Like, which is fine. You don't
I was okay
show
with
constant.
That. I don't
I
like
too.
Seeing
that's...
things stuck in people's
no, but
eyes.
You could, but,
good.
No.
Yeah, but that creates... That makes me more uncomfortable if I'm seeing it a bit more. I'm like, oh,
I don't
fuck,
know.
This is
I just like how the movie kind of keeps you in that creepy zone, though. Like, you guys, I guess, are looking for this big grandiose payoff.
No.
I'm like how it kind of kept you in the creepy zone the whole time.
No,
it wasn't necessarily trying to like
scare
you.
No, that's what I mean, though. It did. That's the whole point. It did keep me in that. Okay, I want to know where this is leading to because it's still pulling me in, but so far the payoffs, I'm like, okay, where's this going? Okay.
And then it ends.
Okay. And then it ends. I'm like,
So you were looking for a payoff.
Well,
like
no, but every film like this should have a payoff. That's like,
I like
there's
how
always
it
a payoff.
Just, it kind of keeps you in that creepy, you know,
no, I'm not saying that I'm not,
no,
you're completely misinterpreting what I guess me and Andrew are going by. We're not disagreeing with that it didn't keep me in a creepy vibe. It did. But there's a difference between being creeped out and then for what I felt like the film was supposed to be building, which was shock and oh my god.
But does
and
it have to?
No.
The film was building towards that, though. That's the whole point of a horror film, is to build up to shock and to like, holy shit.
So Jack, if I could interject there.
Go ahead.
I don't actually think it even maintained its creepy vibe at the end. I think that the payoff actually lessened how the creepiness I was feeling, because I was like, oh, that's it, we're done. Like,
well, that's
the
last 5 minutes. So at that point, it's kind of like whatever. At that point,
yeah, because I'm like, oh, I've disconnected. It's lost me at that point. So that's the point I'm making. It's not that it leaves me. I'm okay with the movie not shocking me at the end. I'm okay with that. That's not a problem for me. But if it leaves me with a certain feeling, that's effective. But it didn't do that.
Okay.
That's my problem. Is
well,
that,
that's
is
very
that
different.
The payoff happened, and then I went, oh, I don't care anymore.
Yeah.
Like, I stopped caring. So I feel almost nothing now. And then the movie ends. So I feel disappointed.
Yeah. And I understand that because, that goes to the whole thing of like, you were looking for a better payoff. Yeah.
And there was also going for like a sixth sense. Like, it was building up for that twist ending. And they were playing it off like, oh, it's this person. And then they flip on the twist and like, oh, no, it's actually this.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that execution was like, not done well. Mm-hmm. And I guess the thing, the whole movie's building towards this. So it's for most audience members, they want to know what's the point of this film.
Mm-hmm.
What is actually, why am I watching this? Yeah, the journey has been decent, but the end, it's got to end. It's got to end somewhere. It's got to be something that, oh, that was worth this entire journey.
Mm-hmm.
And Andrew said, what I've said, I felt like the ending and just everything it was building up towards was just like a fart in the wind. Just whatever.
And... Oh man, I thought you were gonna go full Venom there for a second there,
like a turd in the wind.
I should have actually. I'll edit that out.
So you guys see. So it sounds like some people are not gonna have 9 sessions of this movie.
I think that was yeah.
Oh, it's too late. Glasses over glasses.
I'll say one other thing too. What did you think about the fact? So Jack, when they show the here are all the sessions numbered, and it goes up to session 9, you're like, oh, when he gets to session 9, it's gonna be a crazy thing. What did you think of that payoff?
Yeah, actually the that's the thing, like the build up with it and hearing the tapes. I loved hearing the tapes. The tapes were cool. Again, this was bringing me Arkham vibes because I just loved
Black Christmas.
Oh, actually that's a good one too.
Audio
logs in any video game.
That's true, actually.
BioShock.
That's true, but going through Arkham Asylum, it's a mental institution.
But like those tapes too, like some of the best performances, and you don't see the actors.
The tapes were great, but yeah, no, I was expecting that 9th one to be like either because even how they were like shooting it, like him opening the box and it was cutting back and forth with other things. I that was giving me like, has something been released?
Type of thing,
and then
the whole like. Like when he did that, like everybody, like he cut himself and then he got asbestos in the eye.
Yeah,
and all
there was
that
a
stuff.
Lot of that. And I was just like, okay.
But then there was no payoff for that.
Nothing. Yeah. And then even like when the tape started again and it's like Simon's here and I'm just like, okay. And then they show all the photos on the wall. I'm like, okay.
That was still like, I would say though, the best as far as payoff goes.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, no, like
because
like I said,
it was well acted, like voice acted.
Yeah.
I thought it was pretty neat.
Yeah. To me, this was just like, I'm going to bring wrestling logic into this little bit.
Yeah.
Is that this was a good match. It had good psychology. It built it up. But the ending, the twist ending was just, again, it sucked.
It was just Hulk with his leg drop and that's it. And I'm off to drink.
No, even that is like, I'll accept that. This one was more like they botched it. It was a botched ending. Like, oh, you build that up and then it's over.
Yeah.
You just got schoolboyed and that's it.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like, if you're going to build up so much, if you're creating that disappointment for yourself. I feel like if as a filmmaker, if you're going to put that much emphasis on these specific things, and then your explanation isn't even going to, I would have been fine if they had kept with the mystery a little bit. If they had ended and been like, there's no 100% explanation. But I feel like they tried to fully explain everything at the end, and that might have been to its detriment a little bit too much.
Yeah, there's a few things they were showing. I'm like, okay. And then even certain things, I'm just like, that's not really much of a twist. I kind of saw that coming. Or little things like that I'm like, okay, I've seen this in other movies. Or I don't know. It's just a weak payoff.
I am happy that they didn't go with the whole late 90s, early 2000s trend, though, of like it was all in his head the whole time.
Yeah.
Because I forgot about like the whole ending, and I was like, is that really where they're going? Because then I would have been really upset, because that was what everybody did for like a 5-year period.
I did it.
Where it was just, even you did it. But it was just like, everybody's...
Actually, sort of. I did a twist on it.
Sure. Yeah, well, that was the whole thing. Right?
Yeah.
But no, the whole thing with Fight Club, American Psycho, and you name it. Like, every movie was like, it was all in his head. And by, like, the end of that 5-year period, it was like, enough. Like, stop it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm glad they at least didn't do that, just as a side point.
Yeah.
Also, another thing that I didn't talk about this movie that I liked is I do like the stuff that they don't show you, like how everything on the tape stays on the tapes. I like how you don't see inside the house when he's like parked outside, and they always do voiceover, and it kind of extends a bit more as the movie goes on about, you know, what happened and all that with his wife and all that kind of stuff. I do like that as well. I think that plays to, you know, the style of the film, and I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I thought when there was comedy, I thought the comedy worked. You know, good.
Little bits,
the little banter back and forth of just these guys who clearly just don't like each other.
They're there for the job.
Phil and Hank didn't like each other, and you can see that tension. But you can also see there's tension building between Gordon and Phil.
Correct.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, it's just like I've been in those work environments where you like it's not one for all. It's like, give me my check.
Yeah.
And let me go home.
Well, everybody's in it for themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, I like kind of, and they captured that well, just the, and them even commenting is like, you don't want to stay in this job forever because you'll eventually go crazy or something like that.
Yeah.
And I've been in those type of jobs where you're like, if I stay here any longer, I'm going to kill myself. Just, it's, I thought that part was good. Like I said, like, it's a mixed bag for me. I don't want to harp on and say I hate this movie. I don't.
Yeah.
It was the parts that are good was well executed, but I just felt like it just needed maybe a couple more drafts just to iron out the payoffs.
A couple more sessions.
Oh yeah. God. Well.
Yeah. I like that last part.
Yeah. So.
I do agree with Zach though. That whole the whole at the house stuff. The way they dealt with like his domestic life and what he had done, that was good. I
like
that.
Yeah, no, I loved all the like the wide tracking shots, old school helicopter shots. You know,
yeah. Those are great. There was one detail that I was like, when he discovers the empty peanut butter, and then I'm like, the Jif was in his bag. Layers. There's some foreshadowing for you. Peanut butter.
But that's not the
peanut butter in his bag.
That's not the only foreshadowing in the film. But it's an obvious one.
Yeah. So it's an obvious one.
Yeah, because you know Gordon has something to do with it if you paid attention. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So I feel like there were just a few here and there. I feel like it was like layered with it. There was so much of it. But yeah, you know, like but that's the point though. That whole scene was really I thought was really well executed.
Like underground or whatever.
Yes.
Oh, when the power was going off and he's running down the hall and the lights.
That was good.
That was cool.
Like that shit. Like you said, like those parts were cool.
They built up that guy has a real phobia. He's actually terrified, and that's a terrifying thing to happen.
Yes.
Like that. So that's a really cool shot. Mm-hmm. So that's the problem that I had. I think that's why I'm saying like it's solid, but I just wish there was so much more to it.
Yeah. No, it does
just because it has those qualities that if they had done a bit more, I feel like they could have really had something.
They did a good job at again building dread, building atmosphere, and also just exposition. Like I thought just the opening and them just throwing out facts that do come back, like the things that were paid off, like again the fear of God being afraid of the dark, or you know, showing off little things about him screaming in the car. You're like, why is he yelling in the car? And then you see his leg and those little things I thought were really good. And that's why I guess that's why it's frustrating and why it's a mixed bag, because it's just like, okay, everything else what I was really wanting just didn't, it was just again like I said, fart in the wind type of stuff. Venom.
Turd in the wind.
Seeing as you've actually been inside Riverview, how did the atmosphere compare?
It's actually pretty close.
I've been inside Riverview
as
well. It does
compare.
You guys just all go hang out in
Riverview.
I used to live in Riverview.
Isn't Riverview
New Brunswick?
Oh, yeah.
That was actually my official small town in Moncton.
Yeah. No, Riverview Hospital is just, there's some spots you're just like, no wonder this is like the most used location in Canada.
Yeah, but isn't it, they're reopening?
They might. They've been talking about that for a long time.
What is the plan?
Making it a strip club?
No,
a mental health facility.
Oh, they're actually doing that?
Yeah.
The thing with that is, and they mentioned this in the movie too, is that the patients are essentially like just kicked out onto the streets.
That's Riverview.
Like,
that's what happened.
That's what happened. That's what happened in the case of Riverview. But kind of an interesting how it plays how it doesn't play into this movie at all, because like they mentioned a little bit at the beginning, and so you think, okay, they've mentioned that like former patients like to come back around here and like camp out and stir shit up, think that might be part of the part of the problem later on in the movie.
Yeah, and you see the two guys by the generator, and you're like, oh, does that have something to do with it?
Maybe Gordon is an old patient.
I was wondering that too, and kind of wondering like if like that kind of like plays into my whole idea of maybe the movie isn't actually real. Like if he's a former patient or a current one, even.
Patient.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I feel like that's the bummer, is that they plant all these seeds, but they go there. There's nothing else there. They plant them and then they just go, oh, forget about it. Like, that's part of building the tension. That's it. Yeah. There's nothing else to
They're setting up for session 10.
The patients never come. Nobody else ever comes back. Yeah, it was actually all him.
Well, yeah, they're kind of like, they're kind of setting up this expectation of like, perhaps there's, there's an external evil that's going to come in and mess their day up at the,
it was internal all along.
Yeah. Oh, Simon.
Simon says, right? You got to do it.
It was just like I was expecting to see some shit right out of Mother.
You like that one?
Hey, hey, Zach, I was expecting to see shit right out of Mother, if you know what I'm talking about. Just like, and that, I feel like also
wait, are you shitting on Mother right now?
Pardon?
You put shit on Mother?
No, no, no.
Wait, what are you saying from Mother?
Mother?
No, with the babies. I was expecting to actually see
Oh, the baby.
I was expecting some of that shit. They explained it in the movie. They were going like, they would rip the slow builds.
I don't know why Alex said it tasted like chicken.
I wasn't expecting that. No, I was.
I don't know why you'd expect that.
Because I saw a baby in a giant boiling pot. I was thinking Fatal Attraction the whole time. I was like, I'm going to see some shit. Like,
if that's what you were expecting, then I no wonder you were disappointed.
Going a little off topic, I didn't want to see it,
but I was just like, oh, God.
Have you seen the alternate ending for Fatal Attraction?
Yeah.
Just wondering.
I've only seen the movie once.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, it's been a long time, but yeah. Yeah, no, I know. I know they had to reshoot the ending and everything.
Yeah.
So like, fuck that.
Yeah, exactly.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there were two reasons that this film was made, especially at Danvers, because the director, Brad Anderson, he went by Danvers every day for a year. And as a director, he thought to himself, I got to use that for a shooting location one day. And there was a murder in Boston in 1995. It was Framingham, Boston. It's called the Burnt Ziti murder. Ziti is an extruded pasta, smaller than rigatoni, but larger than Mazzani. There was a guy named Richard Rosenthal on August 29th, 1995, 40 years old, upper-class insurance executive. He killed his wife. He beat her face in with a rock to the point where she couldn't be identified. This actually happened. He took out her heart and her lungs. He took the body into the backyard, took out the heart and lungs, put them on a stake. And this is all over the fact that she burnt some ziti. The guy had everything going for him. Good job, wife. Comes home one day, just absolutely snaps over the smallest thing. This was the other thing that inspired Brad and Steven to write this film.
Gotcha.
How, like, why, what leads a person to all of a sudden snap like that? So that gave them this idea.
They even used the pasta connection.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, they.
They you don't know they were cooking, there. So.
So cooking up suspense.
Well, they said said she was cooking pasta. That's what the water was for. Yeah, the boiling water. Yeah,
boiling water all over his leg.
I just knew boiling water. I didn't get the.
Yeah, no, they no, they specifically said pasta. So hey,
shit.
So thankfully, this guy he pled not guilty by reason of insanity. Nobody bought it. In 1996, November 7th, jury found him guilty.
I guess that was that whole connection with the with the guy, you know, oh, his dad's the attorney, was the attorney or is the attorney general or whatever, and he's saying like, oh, insanity, they never, you never, most it never works, right? And he said all that stuff. Yeah,
that's part of it. Yeah,
cool.
And then there was the Patricia Willard case that Mike was talking about that was part of the reason that Danvers was closed down. Now, that Patricia Willard scandal, that was fabricated for the film. They just made that up. But that was based on a book called Michelle Remembers from 1980, which was a similar story. A woman named Michelle, she came up with similar stories that Patricia Willard did. She told those stories to her psychiatrist, a man who she later married. She got onto Oprah, and the 1980s and the early 1990s, that's when the whole satanic panic was going on. There's a great book by a guy named Jeffrey S. Victor. He wrote a book called Satanic Panic, The Creation of a Contemporary Legend. Fascinating book. And that's where I learned that the whole razor blade in the apple, at that time, that was not real. That was fabricated. Nowadays, I would believe it. But then, no, it didn't happen. and people were finding Satan everywhere.
Yeah.
And Dungeons and Dragons was satanic and all this bullshit.
Listen to Stairway to Heaven backwards. Well, you'll hear it.
I was going to say, there's all the tapes and stuff too that like a lot of like faux like Christian leaders and stuff would like mm-hmm. distribute the whole satanic panic kind of thing, being like, oh, Halloween's bad and this is why. And
you gotta get
and
back to the roots, satanic ritual.
Yeah, and just going all over like a bunch of stuff. There are millions of those tapes.
Didn't they kind
of
play with that in Halloween 3, Season of the Witch, a little bit?
I guess kind of, but yeah. But
still,
yeah.
Still need to see that.
Wait, we haven't seen Halloween 3?
Yeah, I haven't seen it either.
Neither really?
I'd be interested to see what you guys think. Some people really like it. Or they are just like, oh, it's trash.
I'm way more open to watching it than I say it was like 5 years ago. Just
well,
because,
sure,
because
no Michael Myers.
Well, not even just that, because that was all like, I don't want to see it. And then you're like, oh, actually, this is, if you ignore that white elephant and just see it just as something its own thing.
Yeah.
It's actually pretty not too bad.
Yeah. You know, and Tom Atkins.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
Happy Halloween. Happy Halloween.
Did anyone have any questions? Like, did anything in the film not make sense? And when I say that, the number 4 plays in.
Yeah.
And I thought you were going to bring this up.
When you're talking about the tree and stuff.
They were trying to make the connection between the number 4 and Mary Hobbs and Gordon.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to make you see a connection between Gordon and Mary with the number 4,
right.
But you don't exactly know what it is yet, not until the end.
Mm-hmm.
Because Simon, from my perspective, Simon is a spirit, an entity.
Yes.
Right. He's one of those things that comes in when you're most vulnerable, and he helps you to do things that you otherwise wouldn't normally do. Basically, he's an excuse.
He's the devil on your shoulder who tells you to do the things.
Kind of like, Simon says.
Yeah,
he's in everybody. Yeah. The way I look at it.
I said that earlier.
Wait, you didn't catch that? Nope. I'm just like, I'm wondering if that like wasn't displaced from a concept with that title.
Yeah, whatever.
Simon says.
I rolled my eyes when he said
Die Hard with a Vengeance. I told you. I'm going to bring it up in every film.
No, but he like, I don't know, like... I saw it as, it's something that could come out of anybody, right? Like, it's not like from my perspective, it wasn't something external that enters your brain or your mind and tells you to do something. It was always there. It's in everybody. It just takes you need to become weak and wounded to be able, for that to be able to come out. You need to hit such a point where that thing that's always been there finally comes out.
It's like cancer. Everyone has cancer cells. It's just there's one thing that'll bring it up.
And
then you can never get rid of it.
It's the Joker logic. Takes one bad day.
Yeah. Because like if you have like schizophrenic tendencies, you know, that gets, you know, if your family have, if you have a history of that, you know, you're more at risk and that could happen to you. So again, it's one of those things where Simon just represents that to me.
Yeah.
So... yeah, I don't know.
Like, I think it's more of like a child's play angle where the Simon Says toy just came to life and was like, kill, kill.
Or is this actually a secret sequel to Simon Says starring Dennis Rodman?
Sure. I'm up for that.
I'm sure it is. That's the fry in the coke.
You're
one,
fired.
anything with Dennis Rodman is approved in my book. Like, and you just got to put him, you got to put him in the movie.
Isn't there only like... 3 movies he's actually starred in.
Double Team was one.
Double Team was Jean-Claude Van Damme. That shit's great. and then Simon Says, where he's like a secret agent on a yellow motorcycle. The Coke Machine one is actually in Double Team.
Oh, that's Double Team. Yeah. Okay.
And then he's in WCW for a little bit.
and he's hanging out with Kim Jong-un.
Oh, yeah. That's more recent. You know, he's America's hope.
Yeah, America's.
The diplomat no one asked for.
So the reason I didn't go from left all the way around, because if you go from me to everyone else, then back to me, it forms a pentagram.
I noticed that.
because if everyone else is going to start talking about Christmas in November, then I'm going to bring the spirit of Halloween into December. Just because, fuck you.
Well, and not to mention we were severely lacking any Halloween-ish movies.
We had Tucker
Halloween.
And Dale versus
Except
Evil.
That,
that was about it.
And Christmas is heavily based on Saturnalia, which is pagan and therefore inherently satanic.
Right.
And Jesus Christ was not born on December 25th.
No.
I don't care who says what. No. You can think it all you want.
I think even most fundies at this point don't actually, like, will admit that that's not
a lot of people will. You know, there's if you watch documentaries like Kidnap for Christ, or there's another one I can't remember the name of it, but they're really scary in their belief.
Oh yeah,
like really the indoctrination, they don't call it that, but that's what it is.
Oh yeah,
and they're. It's disturbing.
I do like the title of that doc, though. That's
yeah.
It's pretty good. It's just like, yeah. Whoa.
Yeah, but Kirk Cameron, I mean, he has the best.
Saving Christmas.
Yeah, yeah. He has the best.
Saving Christmas. Oh, don't spoil my pick for next week. Oh. Jeez.
It's good. Another underrated horror movie, I guess.
Right.
That's good shit.
No one else got anything to say about it?
Well, we're kind of avoiding going into too much detail because that's the thing. Like, it is one of those movies. It's a lot like my opinion in terms of recommending it is very much like on Europa. Is like it's a one and done. It's like, okay, I saw it. I'm good.
Europa.
No.
I would watch Europa again.
Before. I would. Yeah, yeah.
Well, you kind of liked Europa more, I think, than
I would say. I would watch Europa over this film again, just because Europa has, like, as I mentioned in the Europa review, I actually had there was things interesting that kept me going, but
you would give it a few sessions.
Yeah, but it wasn't like entertaining. Whereas this one, it was like I was entertained at times.
Yeah.
But just in terms of the whole thing, it was just like,
mm-hmm. Yeah, it just leaves that, you with such a meh feeling at the end that you have no desire to.
It was just back. This film just has a bad case of blue balls, man. It just didn't
damn straight.
Yeah,
maybe that in a way is the point because they weren't going for an MTV style slasher film,
which is good.
Yeah, they wanted to leave you with a kind of an uneasy feeling and that really, sorry to keep going with this because you had something to say, but I agree with Zach. I love the atmosphere. I watched this with headphones by myself.
Yeah.
And there's a whole lot that you don't get from watching it on a TV as you do with headphones up. There's so many. I love the sound and I love the experimental soundtrack. Like, I'm glad there wasn't a full soundtrack. I'm glad it was just chords and a little bit of music peppered throughout because they want to keep pushing you into that uneasy feeling.
I'm surprised you haven't butchered me yet.
It's not over yet.
It's just like your opinion, man.
Oh, we're referencing a great movie now. There we go.
Session 10.
Does that make this the big disappointment?
Oh, that's funny. I like that one, actually.
No, like, I think where the disconnect is, for at least for me, maybe for Jack too, is that because of the ending, rather than being left in. So you're saying like that MTV slasher ending? Of course, it's fine that it didn't have that. That's not what I would want from it anyway.
They didn't
want
to go big.
Yeah, no problem not going big, but the problem is that once that happened, once the reveal happened, once I saw, you know, kind of the movie showed its hand completely, I felt like everything I was feeling kind of deflated. So I wasn't left with that feeling. That's my problem. My problem is that I didn't get left feeling uneasy and tense anymore. It all deflated immediately. Mm-hmm. Like, I just felt like a pop balloon.
Yeah. I also would be curious of what... like as you're watching it a second time going around now, knowing the ending and all that, I just feel like, you know, a lot of nitpickers or people will just, I feel like you would pull the film apart in terms of like, how is he talking to him? Why are they like, in terms of establishing a point of view? Cause it doesn't really have a true first person perspective.
But that's the idea. I think it's just confusion.
No, I know, but but in terms of logic in the end, it's kind of like,
well,
some things I'm just like, okay, if you're going to tell me this is how it is, but you're going to show me this. Like, I feel like the first 5 minutes, like that opening scene in the van, takes on a whole new layer now that you know the ending.
Mm-hmm. Well, it does, because it's like, what's, like, Gordon's like, what's his motivation? Because it is at the beginning, he's he's promising the Billy there to do a 3-week job in 1 week because I really need the money. Mm-hmm. And you think at the beginning that he needs the money because he has a baby girl and she's sick. But by the end of the movie, you know that he's killed his wife and daughter. What does he need the money for?
Exactly.
Is he is his plan? If what we're assuming what we're watching is taking place in the real world in real time and take it at face value, what's his motivation? What's his end game at this point? Yeah. Like, is he trying to like be able to make a run for it? Or I'm kind of more mentally, as I've said a few times in the camp, that like he's already like in custody / therapy, and the movie that we're seeing is kind of a mix of his of delusion possibly mixed in with real life things that had happened before, but I think that this movie that we're watching is not meant to be like taken at face value.
But then you said that that we're taking the timeline at face value. So you're saying that, what does he need the money for? But he doesn't make that promise. He makes that promise before the movie says that he committed this crime at all. Mm-hmm. Because he said at one point, I went to go celebrate the getting this job. And then he goes in and that's when he does it. So he got the job already before he made that promise.
Okay. Maybe I misinterpreted that.
He made that promise before. Yeah.
Flop of it then, because I thought it was
so it could have been for the kid, and he just kept, now he did the deed and he's fucked up.
But now he's committed to it. Okay,
because that was a line he said when he's explaining to Phil,
Dave Caruso's character.
Yes, thank you. I'll just say every time. when he was explaining to him when I hit my wife, and then he explained what he did, he said, I was going home to celebrate getting the job. And then whatever, she spilled and I snapped, right?
So at that point, after he had killed his wife and kid on Friday night, he had repressed memory syndrome, just like Mary Hobbs had repressed memory syndrome, which is why he went about the rest of the week thinking that I hit my wife, I can't go home, I feel so bad, I love my wife, why did I do that? Mm-hmm. And Mary, on the session tape, she kept saying, why isn't my family coming to visit me? She didn't know that she had murdered her family.
So the
timeline which we're seeing is current, but he's already in that delusion.
But I got that he was delusional as soon as he figured out that he was crazy at the end, or it started to dawn on him, you know, or that
he
reveal
never knew
happened.
He was crazy.
There was a little bit
his friends were like kind of like hyping it up that, you know, like you know, as soon as they say stuff like, oh, you know, he's the calmest guy I know, I've never seen old Gordon snap, it's like, okay, you know, he's going to at some point, but I mean, the twist is he already has.
Yes. Yeah, and you don't get that till the end, which could be seen as a payoff, but again, meh, if you want to go that way with it, that's fine. You had mentioned something, I can't remember what it was, but I had an answer for you. When Gordon was talking to Phil on Friday morning before Craig comes in, and Hank is on the floor with the pin in his eye, he's been lobotomized.
Right.
At that point, because it was Friday, everyone else was dead because Gordon killed them. Phil was a ghost. That is not described anywhere in the film. There's no way you would know that unless you had listened to the director's commentary afterwards. Phil was a ghost. Phil was telling Gordon to wake up.
Yes.
And
you
might get the idea that you figure something was wrong on Friday morning because you don't hear the radio squelch when Phil says, come back. Mm-hmm. And Gordon's sitting in the van on Friday morning. Mm-hmm. There's no radio squelch on Phil's end, but there is on Gordon's end. So you might get the idea that something's not quite right at that point. Why is there no radio squelch?
Right.
Yeah. So he's a ghost and he's trying to get him to wake up. It's similar to the beginning of the film where they're good friends. Phil is there for Gordon. And in the end, after he's dead, when he's a ghost, he's still there for him. He's still trying to help out his friend in the only way he can.
Yeah. But, it feels like he gets him to wake up. He's telling him, wake up, like, open your eyes. And then he sees what he's done. He sees that Phil's not there. Everything starts to come together. And that's like him finding out everything as well. It's not just the audience. It's also him figuring out what he's done or what he, everything he's done.
For a second. Only for a second.
Yeah.
Because
yeah, but that's still realization. At least he has like a moment of realization, right? Yeah. That's the point I'm making, is that he knows what he did at least at the end.
At the end.
But it's gone. Yeah. It's gone because as soon as Craig says, hey, who are you talking to? And he looks back and Phil's gone.
Yeah.
Craig comes in. Craig sees Hank on the floor and he's like, oh, I'm confused here, man. And that's when Gordon
dozes off of it.
He dozes off because Simon has taken over again. Hmm. And he has no idea what he's doing when Simon has possessed him. So
he's having like lucid moments. Has a lucid moment.
That's why he was sleepwalking on Tuesday night when Hank had gotten the coins. He was sleepwalking. He was under the control of Simon.
Like,
just
like waddling towards him. And
So I could be an apologist for just about everything in the film. I myself found a little bit of logical inconsistencies. I'm not going to dwell on them, but they are there. Yeah. I wanted to ask you real quick. There are no cops in this film. But there's a security guard. He's kind of like the everyday guy, you know, just doing his job as a security guard. So as a kind of law enforcement guy, what did you think of him?
That guy, I don't know. He was there for like a second, so he
insignificant.
If he managed to not fuck it up during that time, that's a pretty good sign.
Yeah, right. Like he had, he seemed like he was doing his job. I didn't see anybody coming in and fucking with them.
I think that's what the film was missing.
He must have done his job just fine.
That's what the film was missing, was the cops going, "What's going on here?" And then they like fall through the floor or something and die.
Be fair, is like does nobody ever check up on this place or check up on them, how the work's doing or whatever? Isn't this a big city contract? No cops coming to
cops
to,
gotta go follow up
to,
on that city
to
contract.
at least like drive by and make sure everything's safe. No,
I gotta bring
too
in
much asbestos.
Don't want to get near it.
Yeah, they don't want to get near it.
What's that cop movie? The tons of sequels, horror. What?
Wait, what?
There were four of them, right?
Yeah. Maniac Cop.
Yes.
Yeah,
Bruce Campbell was in one of those, pretty sure.
First. I think he was in the first one.
I think he was in the first one. It was like 87 or something, or 89, around the late 80s.
Somewhere around there. But we should bring some of those in for Andrew and see what he thinks about the cop procedures.
Judge it as a police procedural?
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
Is it as accurate as the Police Academy films, or
I think it's more accurate.
You know what? I'll give that security guard a solid 4 or 5 stars. Let's say 4.5. Yeah,
hey. 4 out of 5.
4.5
out of 5.
Because you know what? He did his job, man. Yes, he explained everything. He had no reason not to trust these guys in the car. You know, he could have said. He would say, what's the gun for? And he's, you know, he's an American security guard. Makes sense that he has a gun.
Pew, pew, pew.
He's like, it's to keep people out. Totally makes sense. He explains the job. Everything made sense that he was saying. And he only needed to be there to, like, open the gate, let the people in. He was doing his job. Nothing more. He's not a cop. But as a security guard, he gets my stamp of approval.
All right.
Hey, man, have you seen Paul Blart in action? You need to take
I have seen Paul Blart.
You need to take action, whether you're in Vegas or you're just in a regular old mall. You need to take action.
I think we need, like, a sound effect, like a chime, or even better, like the sound of, like, an impressive sounding stamping into something for your cop approval.
Approved,
certified competent.
We should just take the sound
competent.
No, lift it, lift the sound directly from Shawshank. You know, the approved.
Oh, yeah.
For parole, we can just lift that sound effect. That'd be good.
Yeah.
So before we go, there was one thing that they cut out of the film. There was a subplot involving a homeless woman. Who was skulking around in the hospital.
Say, they should have kept something like that.
No. And the reason is the test audiences, they thought that homeless woman was Mary Hobbs because of the security guard mentioning patients going back in.
Yeah. Yeah.
They would have thought that was Mary. And ultimately, at the end of the film, that homeless woman killed Gordon. But the
okay,
the
I take back my statement. Yeah,
the that's... filmmakers thought that it was much creepier that Gordon was the only one who remained alive in that big empty place.
With that logic, I agree. I take back my, I rescind my.
We thought statement. Like, oh, it was just for like atmosphere and stuff.
And honestly, I don't think this movie needed a textbook red herring. Like, no, I think it was totally fine without it.
Yeah, no. When you explain it like that, it makes sense. Yeah, but in terms of the initial, like, why did that would have added more shit to it? Yeah, yeah. But then when he explains, like, oh. That's yeah, actually but if, worse. Yeah,
exactly. I think Jack wanted not just one homeless person, but like a mob of them.
They could have had
to be like, "What you doing in my house?"
Like kids. In Day of the Dead,
yeah,
a whole bunch of them.
They could have had some kids doing graffiti or some shit, or like, you know, because it's an abandoned place. Like kids, they're saying kids are going there, so it was weird that nobody showed up except for those two.
The graffiti artist who sold the pot to Phil. Mm. That's why he was smoking.
They're drug dealers,
but. But that was like, and I was like, oh,
who's okay, actually smoking the weed?
Know, they didn't like,
fucking awesome.
Here's the thing, man.
See David Caruso
big abandoned building like that. You're going to come back into that after leaving it all night, you know, even the first night or something, or even the first day you come in and you're going to show up and it's just going to be nice and empty and like kind of clean, actually. Like it was, that's another thing. It was weirdly clean. It was, I thought that it was a little bit like, it didn't have, like, if it's as run down and abandoned for as long as you think with drug dealers, there'd be fucking needles around everywhere. There'd be like,
I've been to Riverview.
Just go, yeah, I'm going to say, like, if you want, like, a realistic, yeah, go to Riverview. Like, you've been, you said you've been there.
I've been there.
Yeah, it's a little bit fucked up, right? Places like that, but it just felt a little too clean, like movie set clean, which is fine. Like, it didn't bother me that much. But the point I'm making, though, like, it would have been cool if, you know, they come back in the next morning and get the fuck out of here, you know, you dumbass teenagers or... You're doing drugs here or whatever, get the fuck out. It would have like added a bit more to the atmosphere.
Doing drugs by the asbestos poison. You're like, what are you doing?
They're smoking the asbestos.
You know about that?
Why the fuck not?
Yeah, it gets you real high.
There was a funny little thing on Monday when Hank meets Jeff.
Yeah.
And Hank was saying, you using this loud music, it jiggles spooge dust in the air, gets into your lungs, and he's smoking a cigarette at that time. Like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Or even just like, you get hoax your lungs. I'm like, says the one smoking.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, he kind of contradicted himself a bunch. I
mean, yeah.
That's why he had to go.
That's right. That's why he needed
that
to
exit plan, man. It wasn't
and
the
was
exit
the
plan
one.
He had.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man. He had the stay plan.
Yeah.
Yeah,
no, yeah, they could have added something like that, I thought. Whatever. But yeah, I don't know. The homeless woman, like, maybe I could see how that could be.
I'd go with the mob.
And also that ending is really dumb, I think.
Yeah, yeah. That's actually worse than what they have. I'll concede that as well. Yeah.
That can make you, like, angry at a film when something like that happens.
It's so random.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they had maybe multiple endings for this film and they just went with the best one that they liked.
They picked the ninth
one. Like Clue?
Pardon?
Like Clue.
Yeah, like Clue.
Yeah, depending on which theater you were in, you get a different one.
There's three separate endings and there's holes in all of them.
Yeah.
I'll take that, though, because that's interesting. What ending did you see, you know? That's a little bit more fun.
Yeah. Actually, it was fun because there was a trailer for the next season of Brooklyn Nine-Nine came out the other day. And I realized they actually had multiple endings for the same trailer, like airing on different. Yeah, there was one where it ended with a joke with Terry Crews, and then it ended with a joke about Captain Holt. Mm. And I was like, oh shit, I wonder how many there actually are. I've only found two. Wonder they have one for every character.
Well, I mean, it makes sense, yeah, because they have like the big, like, grandiose first half, and then when they cut back to the station, it's like, okay, they probably just did a million takes of that.
Yeah,
something different every time,
pretty much. Or like the Once Upon a Deadpool, just one day and just film as much shit as possible.
Oh yeah.
They probably just spend a day or even a couple days with just like the him and the actor in the bed just ad-libbing back and forth.
See, that kind of sucks because it's like, I still haven't seen Deadpool 2.
Neither have I.
But like, I don't want to see the PG one, like the joke one. It's like, you gotta see,
you gotta
the
see
first
the actual
to
movie.
See that one,
it,
right?
It adds context and makes it funnier.
Yeah, so
like, I I've seen it, but I haven't seen the Once Upon a Deadpool yet.
Well, yeah,
although I want to.
Of course, yeah. No, I want to see Deadpool 2, and yeah, hopefully I can see that soon, because then when I'm in Edmonton I can check it out.
Yeah, that'll be a Christmas viewing for me. There we
go.
Anyway,
anyone, I should go around the table, ask anyone a final thoughts, and I won't ask you, Jack. Would you recommend the film? Because you've already stated that over, and that's fine.
Did I actually say that
explicitly? Oh, yeah. But, like, it's a one and done. Yeah. You are actually, the one pump chump in terms of this film.
But he never said whether you should watch it at least one time.
Listen, you should rate it out of sessions, okay?
Yeah. Also, I didn't...
How many sessions?
How many sessions?
The almighty question for our bloody show, is it underrated?
I think so.
That's
I've looked on the IMDb. It's got under 50,000 votes, so for me it qualifies. Its rating is about 6.5. I think it should be a bit higher.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But Jack, go ahead.
Yes. In terms of like I said, I had never heard of this movie. I went into this cold, not knowing a goddamn thing about it. It's one of those films where as you were explaining about listening to it on headphones, it might be one of those films. We've talked about films that are great group films. Mm-hmm. This seems like one of those films, or the opposite. You watch it by yourself, alone in a dark room.
Yeah,
the sound turned way up. I feel like that if you want to take to look at this film, that's probably the best way to do it. Just watch it by yourself and take it or leave it. I think there is a lot of things in this film that are good to make it worth watching. Whether it's underrated, for me personally not so much, but I do think it's not a bad film. It's not like that was dog shit. There was like nothing like that. It was just, again, poor execution, you know, with the ending. And funny enough, I have a similar, not as to the extreme, but I had a very similar feel for, if we're going off of films around that time that had a twist ending that I didn't really care for, was Unbreakable.
I was thinking about that.
Yeah, and I
suck a dick, Jack.
No. I like the opposite though is that I like the ending to Unbreakable. I just thought the execution was a bit rushed, but I thought that the ending was good.
It was fine, Jack.
anyways.
Unbreakable is amazing.
No, it's that's why I said not to the extent, but I was saying it was a great like build up, and then execution I was like, eh. But overall, Unbreakable was like not even close to this film. This Unbreakable is great, but overall,
almost Unbreakable.
Yeah, yeah. No, Session 9. It's not a 9. It's more like a 6.
So you're giving
you
six
keep
sessions.
It at a 6 and
so,
a half.
So you'd say
six sessions.
I think the IMDb rating is dead on. Yeah.
But the IMDb rating though, it's like it's not a true like 6 out of 10. Like there's no movie that's a 10, right? So it's like
6 out of like 8.
So it's more like a 7, you know what I mean? It's more like a 7 point something in real life, like if you're putting it at a 10.
I've seen very few films on the IMDb that get to 9 or
that's,
even beyond.
So that's Shawshank, really. Godfather 1 and 2.
Yeah.
Like the epic, like some best movies of all time.
Yeah, huge movies.
The Rotten Tomatoes rating for this film is actually also 63%.
Is it?
Yes.
Okay. Rotten Tomatoes is a little closer to the out of 10 mark because it does get high scores that are near 100.
Yeah, but you don't know how many people voted on it to get it to that number. That's the thing.
No, there's for Rotten Tomatoes. For the critic score,
it gives you the ratings, but it doesn't give you votes. How many people got that? I don't think that's there on Rotten Tomatoes.
Like how many fresh, how many rotten?
I'm looking it up
in terms of total votes.
Yeah, it's on there.
It you sure?
Yeah, he's looking it up now.
Yeah, it's underneath the percentage.
Yeah, they have the...
You can actually see
the audience score 64 and the tomato meter is 63.
Yeah, but you're looking on the mobile one though. I don't think it has it.
Out of 67 critical reviews.
67 reviews?
Okay. 67, okay.
That's a right amount to make it count.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When it's like 8,
yeah,
then
you're like,
well,
I don't know.
But anyways, I think for if you just want to see an interesting, you know, a little mystery film, it doesn't hurt to watch it. I don't think you'll say you wasted.
You won't lobotomize yourself.
That's good, actually. Yeah. For me it was a bit of a mixed bag, but not one that I regret seeing.
Okay. All right. Roiland.
I thought it was really cool. I've already said I would watch it again. I would watch it before Europa, unlike some of the people at this table.
So much shade. So much shade.
I figured I'm just saying, it's like it seems like like more than like you other three, I'm like more the most enthusiastic about this one.
I like it too.
Yeah, I was gonna say like he seems more on board with you. It's just me and Jack.
I do like
you curmudgeons.
Yeah, I thought I was gonna be alone on this one. I was so worried about that, to be honest. Yeah. Like oh fuck, I'm going solo on this one. Because I could just feel it once the movie ended. Yeah. And then I started talking. I was like, oh, shit. And Ryland talked first. You let her go first. I was like, fuck.
set the tone. And then bounces over to you. And you're just like, okay, well, we're going to go the other way now.
I'm like, I'm the opposite. This is the worst. And then when Jack did it, I was like, oh.
It's the power of the pentagram.
You're like, oh, thank you. I'm not alone. Like, no, that was my first fear. I was like going first. It's like, shit, I'm just going to shit all over this thing. If I'm going first, I was like, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Like, Zach's seen it. He obviously doesn't hate it. And then I was like, you brought it. So I'm like, I'm fucked. Because I
knew it was going to come to me last because I had already seen it. And I knew that I already really liked it.
Yeah.
But Europa is like one of my favorite movies. So if we're doing the whole Europa, to be fair, you look weird at comparison of Europa and Session 9, which
is that?
Yeah.
Is that which actually do you on your prefer? Top 100?
Yeah. It's like the end. It's like 97, 98. Damn, right.
That information was not addressed on the podcast.
Because you didn't bring it up, boy.
Oh, I didn't know.
Wait, did you say Europa is 97 on Tomatoes?
No, it's on his
on Zomato.
His top 100 personal favorite movies. Europa's on it.
I it's like 97, 98.
Oh, so you prefer Europa over this, obviously.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But I mean, that's like a weird thing. Like,
yeah, it is a weird comparison.
Session 9 is still a really good movie.
Yeah. Like, I think the only reason that was brought up was because people that comparison was, oh, would I go back and
just
watch
in terms
it?
Of rewatch value?
Is it rewatch value? Right. And then
and no, Europa definitely is rewatch value reason, too. Yeah. But like, I would be more eager to see this again really quickly. Sure. And like, I understand like your and Jack's points about the payoffs, and like, I kind of agree with it too. But for me, it wasn't like a major part of how I experienced the movie.
Yeah.
Like for me, it's kind of like, well, okay, once the pieces start to come together and you figure out what's going on, my brain is too busy moving backwards to second guessing like everything that I've seen already and trying to apply it in a new perspective. So like by the time the ending came, like it's almost a relief. It's like, okay, I can like catch up a little bit now and process this. Mm-hmm. So that for me, the payoff wasn't, it probably could have been better. Like maybe like Jack was saying, it could have used another draft in the writing room, but for me, it definitely didn't even come close to ruining the movie. I don't know. I'm not sure if I would feel the same way after a second session, if you will. Mm. And further analyzing and rethinking again. But no, after an initial viewing, I really enjoyed it and would definitely consider it underrated and would recommend it.
Hmm. Horatio?
Yeah!
Oh my God. I put it for the life of me.
You
remember
actually
this.
Didn't remember anything.
I forgot. I did.
Oh. I knew that and I don't even watch CSI.
I know. I don't either. I'm so ashamed.
I mean the fact that now like revealing like the critic score on Tomatoes and stuff like that, not to mention its box office, I mean, clearly for me it's underrated. Like and I've always really liked it, and it's commonly on underrated lists, like for people who've seen the movie. Yeah. They're always like, oh, you want an underrated horror movie? Session 9. It's always like people who've seen it, they always throw it on the list. And I totally get it. It's, you know, it doesn't have a ton of big actors unless you are a CSI fan. And that's about it. I mean, there's not a lot of people who jump out to, you know, go for it because there's not a lot of attention on it. Mm-hmm. But I do think it's like a cool, you know, indie movie. I think, you know, the atmosphere is king. I like what you said about putting the headphones on because I think sound design and just taking it all in, I think that's like the strongest point of the movie. And just kind of living in it, you know, living life.
Yeah, especially when Gordon first sees the wheelchair in the hallway when they're in Ward A. If you've got headphones on and your focus is completely on that, you hear the drops of water.
Yeah.
And then the recording, the hiss, the white noise slowly seeps
and
in.
The voice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that uneasiness. I love listening. And
that's early on. It's early on
because they're going to establish that.
And
it makes you want to watch more.
Pretty cool.
Yeah.
Session 9 gave me a boner.
Andrew?
I'm trying to figure out where the plan was in there.
Yeah. No, there's no plan. I'm just letting you know.
You know, if there's anything else that you wanted to mention, absolutely. Or had questions about, because I got all the answers.
Oh, okay. That's good to know. I feel like I jinxed. Sorry. I feel like I jinxed it the last time, just because the last time you brought in a movie, I was like, damn, Alex, every time you bring in a movie, it's my favorite. Like, I love it. Like, you have the best track record. Like, I was like, I love your movies. And then the next movie, I'm like, I fucking hate it. No, no, but I didn't hate it. I don't know that I could go down even Jack's route there and say like, oh yeah, you know, you could, I think it's fine where it is.
Session
like,
fine.
I don't think that it necessarily is underrated. I'm not gonna, no.
Not even dignified.
No. It's, yeah, like, I don't think that it's underrated, just because, you know, if you miss it and you don't seek it out, that's okay. Like, there's no reason there's no reason to seek it out, which is kind of what I look at when I think, is it underrated? Yeah, there should be a reason to go. It's underrated. You should go watch it. I don't know that I would tell somebody, hey, spend, you know, just under 2 hours of your time watching this movie, because then, you know, they might come back to me and say, what the fuck, you know? So I don't know that I could recommend it like that, which is why I can't say it's underrated. Yeah. But, I do want to clarify as well, is that it's not just the payoff, the ending that like ruins the movie for me. It's not just that. I feel that there's nothing to be contextualized, that everything leading up to that point doesn't need that context, so it doesn't add anything to it. So if I went back, so with that being said, if it did add something to it, then I would see more value in everything that came before. But because of that, I don't see it as having anything more than the face value of what I saw. So that's what I'm getting at, is that experience up until that point, besides atmosphere, besides a general sense of unease, isn't much else there for me. So it's not just that payoff that makes me feel like, oh, I didn't like this movie. It's everything else leading up to it as well. So it's the movie as a whole. It fits right in the middle for me, right in what I would consider like a, you know, like a 5 out of 10. Hmm. So I'm right in the middle, where it's like, it didn't upset me. You know, it wasn't a waste of my time. It was something where I got little bits of something here and there, but you know, would I seek it out myself? Probably not. But I jinxed myself. I own that. This is on me. I shouldn't have said that last time, because I set myself up for this. So it's not your fault, Alex. It's my own fault. But no, I do appreciate you bringing in something that at least like that at least had that atmosphere, because I like that. So that's something I can always appreciate in a film. So thanks for that.
It's not your fault, Will. It's
not your fault. Now, Alex, before I'm going to hijack your episode just for a brief moment.
No.
Yes. You didn't go to me first, so I'm going to take your episode first. But
I got a pen. I'm going to fucking lobotomize you right now.
No, it's right. You'll like it. I just want to go off a little side for a second and just say we have a birthday coming up. Mr. Andrew Shuck, his birthday is coming up in a day or two. And I just want to say, I got you a little something. And I feel like it's great to give out in front of all of us.
Oh, I don't know. I'm afraid to open it now.
No.
I'm afraid for you.
No, that's not good.
This is...
No. Yeah. It's cute. It's nothing bad.
Does it have Jack's return address on it? We'll finally learn.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I was going to say, like, it's, you know, it's mail, and that's been a running gag here. I'm a little afraid to open it now.
So. It's from Jack's mailbox. Yeah.
Do a little ASMR didn't explode. With it.
Oh, hold on.
You're not wearing gloves, Andrew. You're already toast.
Right, you're not winning any cop points.
The ASMR channel now.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Something's falling out of it. Oh, thanks, bro. It's actually nice.
Look at the cover.
Oh, no, it's worse.
Yeah!
So, for those who don't know, it's a Scarface the world of yours. It says the world is yours.
What sweet poetry.
Read the card. There's some writing inside.
It says, happy birthday. Hope it's full of money, power, respect! Fucking worst Al Pacino role ever. Overrated dog shit. Anyway.
Oh, I'm glad you like your card.
But thanks for the gift, dude. I do like the back of the card because it has like a Hawaiian style
shirt.
That's
his shirt.
That is, yeah. And you know, his famous his gun, right? Yeah.
Oh, that's not his little friend. That's not the rocket one.
It's not, but it's still like a...
Well, that's the little friend. Yeah, it's the grenade launcher M16.
Because I was going to say, oh, it has the grenade launcher. Yeah, so...
his little friend.
Yeah, you know, it's got his little friend and some scotch. So
yeah.
I appreciate that.
No cocaine, but it is white.
But the card's white. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's there. It's definitely there.
Yeah, I like the artwork. I just don't like...
Well, you can thank Ryland for finding that in the Mob Museum in Vegas. Just throwing that out there.
Oh,
nice.
Mob
Museum? Nice.
What? Mob Museum? Yeah.
Oh, Mob Museum. Dude, I thought you said Mom Museum.
No, the Mob.
The Mom Museum? I was like, I want to go to the museum. It's all about the mamas.
Yeah, Scarface's mom. You know, and she's like all there. And she's giving out cards.
My God, what would it be? Like, I feel like that exists because, like, California has,
that's
like, every
thing,
museum.
Man. That's yeah. True, yeah. That's why I wasn't shocked. I was like, Mom Museum? What the fuck?
Mrs. Doubtfire would be there.
No, this is from the Mob Museum.
Yeah. I never actually went to
Las Vegas. It's a block away from Fremont Street.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That'll be the remake. That'll be the all-female remake of A Night at the Museum. The Mob Museum.
Yeah. So, yeah. There you
go. Or no, it's Bad Moms at the Museum.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Oh. Yeah, but you can thank Ryland for eyeballing and finding that card.
Yeah, but you bought it. I know it was your idea. You were. She was like, "Oh, that's funny," and then you were like,
"That's exactly what happened." He's like, "Let's get her to piss off Andrew." Right.
See? I know, Ryland. I don't blame you. I know it's fine, Jack, the whole way. So thank you, Jack.
You are welcome. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Andrew.
Thanks, bud.
Maybe this episode will be released on your birthday, and that'll be my gift to you to make you pull your hair out.
First favorite movie.
That's right. My favorite Alex movie, right?
That's not true. Definitely not true. So I broke the streak. So what?
You know what? You had the most consistent record. So
yeah. I knew this was going out to left field because this is something that really appeals to me. You know, when I first heard Slipknot's second album, their self-titled. No, Iowa was their third. That was 2001.
Oh,
I'm talking about 99, the self-titled.
Yeah. Okay.
When I first heard that, it harkened back to Session 9. Like there were a lot of little creepy and uneasy things in there that I really liked.
Yeah.
So I had the idea that this wouldn't be a film that everyone would enjoy. But at the very least, I brought it in because I think there are people out there who would really enjoy this kind of atmospheric, uneasy, creepy film. Yeah. And I think this should be gotten out there and get a little more in the way of points on the IMDb. Hit it up past 50,000 at this point. Mm-hmm. So thank you all very much for listening. This has been You Missed It, the Session 9 edition. You can find us on the internets. Either You Missed It ? Or You Missed It ? Podcast, or YMI_podcast on Twitter and Instagram and iTunes and Spotify and all that other good stuff. Special thanks to my friends Brody and Nick at the Jabroni Jabber podcast, two hicks from Alberta who like talking wrestling and music and movies and all that other good stuff. Thanks for the shout outs, guys. They've shouted us out in almost every episode they've done since 30, maybe 25, and they're up to 70 now.
Nice. So, thanks, guys.
Yeah, they're so reciprocate to them. Thank you very much. And everyone else, we will see you perhaps before the new year. I'm hoping so. Ryland, you have any idea what you got for us?
Well, I don't know. Zach spoiled Kirk Cameron, so I'm going to have to go back to the drawing board.
Oh, if that was your pick, I would be so happy. This
isn't Jack's Not Ready. Wrong show for that.
No, we're going to take the left turn and just subtly like move it to Jack's Not Ready podcast.
The truth is I have no idea what I'm picking, so we'll see.
Good. Absolute surprise. I like it. Well, that's it for today. Thank you all very much. Horatio, you gonna play us out?
Yeah!